Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. This is your host, Bill Hendrickson, looking out the windows in this lovely studio at the beautiful blue sky in Carrboro, North Carolina. Don't you folks wish you were here with us? Because today we have two, I'll call them friends, officers of the Carrboro Police Department, Chief Horton and Captain Atack, and you gentlemen are welcome again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You've both been here before. I don't know whether you were here together or not, but you were here before. And we've talked to a lot of the officials of Carrboro, and it's really great to talk to these gentlemen from the police department because they're busy guys, and it's nice to have you take a little hour, a little time to come over here and talk to us. Just to get started, a few sentences of your history personally, where you're from and how you got into this job. We'll talk to the chief first.
Hey, I am actually from Carrboro.
Wow.
Yeah, grew up in an area called Lincoln Park, the Barnes Street neighborhood.
Okay.
Down there. Grew up in, went to Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, and graduated high school. Kind of wasn't sure what I was going to do, so did a variety of different jobs and such, and landed in the police department.
Wow, and, so you've been in this town forever?
Pretty much. Well, I've lived in other places, Durham and Mebane, Orange County.
Oh, so, okay. Well, within sight.
Within sight, yeah. As a crow's fly. Started with the police department in 1993 as a patrol officer, and somehow I made it the chief.
Wow, okay. That's a record, I'll tell you. What about you, Captain? You told me you're from another country.
So I'm imported. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Are you an immigrant?
No, I was actually born a citizen. So so I was born in England. My mom was American. My dad was British.
How did they meet?
I wasn't around to ask.
They didn't tell you?
No, they didn't know. No, they actually worked at the same advertising firm, W.H. Smith & Son. It was an advertising firm. My mom went over after college in the 60s. And so they met and said, let's make beautiful children. And here I am.
Wow.
So we came over to the United States in the mid-70s. And so I spent my formative years in Miami, Florida. And I've been up here in North Carolina, as I like to say, since 1992. I came up for college. And I've been here ever since, been with the town since 1999.
So you had a few years after college before you got into the world of Carrboro.
Yes, yes. I had other jobs related to what I had, to law enforcement, loss prevention and security jobs and all that between finding a real job, as I like to say.
Yeah, well, so you've both been with the department for quite a while, and I guess that speaks well of the department. I remember I interviewed the chief previous to you way back when we first started this radio station, a lady.
Yeah, Carolyn Hutchison.
Right, and she was interesting, and, you know, she's unique being a woman police chief, and I guess she started her career right here in Carrboro, too.
Yes, yes.
She told me that she was undercover, chasing
undercover
drugs.
Undercover narcotics, yeah.
Wow, okay. Well, your department now has how many staff total?
We have 42 staff total, 42 and a half. We have a part-time crime analyst, three civilians, and 39 sworn officers.
Okay, 39, okay. Well, so we mentioned this officer that comes by here the studio from time to time. How do you assign, you know, he's on foot.
Sergeant Quick, officers, we encourage them to walk foot patrol all over town just to get out the car and meet people. So also we sit stationary a lot in different parking lots and different areas of town just to be seen. And I guess this is one of his spots he likes to sit, and he takes the time to come in and speak
and
with you guys.
He always knocks on the window, and we always come in and say hello. I told him to come in today if he came by. He said, Chief's going to be there. I said, yeah, come on by. Well, I may do it. But anyway, that's when you started here. Was that part of your operation to get out and talk to people, or are you just kind of redoing it now?
It used to be foot patrol was mandatory when I first started, as far as like 2 hours, day or night shift. So you got out the car no matter what the weather was.
Oh, really?
Pretty much you walked foot patrol. We didn't have all this necessarily up here, the hotel and
you mean all this commercial building.
Commercial develops, yeah. But we got out and walked, like at Carborough Plaza, you got out, go in and out of the stores, meet some of the clerks and people.
But in the residential neighborhoods too?
You can get out in a residential neighborhood, but our main focus was up here, especially the businesses at nighttime. We'd actually go and pull doors and check doors.
And
make sure they were secure at night.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, now we since schools are a hot issue, we want to talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have how many schools in this jurisdiction of Carborough? We got high school.
Let's see, Carborough Elementary, McDougal Elementary, McDougal Middle School. Yeah, four and Morse Grove.
Okay. What's the deal with schools these days, as far as your department is concerned?
Right now, as far as schools, we have two officers assigned to the high school and middle school. At Carborough High School, we have Sergeant Mayfield out there, and at McDougal Middle School, we have Officer PO2 Tibnan.
Yeah, one person at each school.
Yes,
okay.
At those two schools. Wish we could have officers at the rest of the schools, but unfortunately, we don't.
Okay, so what do the officers do at these schools, and how are they assigned, and how do we know they're there?
You have to identify an officer that will fit in the school.
Are they in uniform?
They're in uniform.
Okay, yeah.
When we choose somebody to go into the school, we also work with the school in picking that officer to see if it's a fit for the school. So the school administrators have a say-so in picking the officer that goes out there. excuse me. Well, the SRO does a multitude of things. They act as a counselor. Obviously, providing security and safety.
Where are they located?
They have an office in each school, in the schools.
In the building.
So they'll walk around the class, the school, and
so they're visible by the students and the faculty.
Yes. Yes.
All day long.
Yes.
Okay. So, what's the security? Construction security of these schools.
The security of the school?
Yeah, how can people get in and out? What's the way to protect people that are in there? I mean, you got your officer there, but he's not standing outside waiting for somebody to show up.
No, the schools do a good job of keeping all the exits and entries locked.
Okay.
You have to get buzzed in. They have security cameras, and they can see somebody coming up to the door.
At every door?
I believe so. And they buzz people in and out through the front entrances of the schools, but the rest of the doors on the perimeter are secured all the time.
Yeah. So can you guarantee the parents in this town that their kids are safe?
I would like to think we can. We do our best to keep the children safe as we can.
Okay, but you don't have anybody at some of these schools.
No, we don't have officers at the rest of the schools. The McDougal Elementary. The SRO at McDougal Middle School is close enough where he can run over there and respond.
It's in the same property.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at Morse Grove and Carborough Elementary, our community service officers, they take time out of their work day to also walk those schools when they have a chance.
What do you call these people?
Community service officers.
Who are they? They're uniformed officers.
Yes, we have a division in our department, community service. They handle like all the safety talks, different community outreach, basically our community policing outreach to the town.
So you feel comfortable as officers running the department that these schools are safe and that the kids and the teachers are safe in these schools? You feel
as comfortable as you can. Yes, comfortable as we can. We try to keep them as safe as we can.
Yeah.
Under conditions, yes.
Well, now these, like this deal down in Florida, in Broward County, where that guy got into school, but there was some officer or somebody that a deputy that they said disappeared. He ran away. I don't quite understand how that could happen.
So that I think is still part of – that's still an ongoing investigation. I think a lot of the information that came out initially can appear true and could actually be true. But until we get the full word from the investigation, it can be hard to definitively state what occurred. Certainly there's an appearance of concerns and behavior, but I think until that report is finalized.
So you don't have the full answer on that.
Right, yeah. We'll all know at the same time, I guess, whenever Broward County or whoever actually is conducting the investigation comes out and says, you know, hey, these are some issues that we had. These are some issues we didn't, you know, where things worked well, and these are some issues to be
improved. Well, all these mass shootings are so fast and so complicated that you can't come up with immediate answers on any of them.
Correct.
And even if you had something like that here, you probably would be doing the same thing. But it's good to know that you feel comfortable about your school system in this town. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's great. If I had kids here, I'd move to Carrboro.
Well, Bill, and I think when you talk about school security, you're not just talking about your police department. You're talking about your school system. You're talking about your partnerships in the community. So it's a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, the Carrboro Police Department, while we are maybe on the front lines of school security, that also we are part of a team that evaluates and looks at issues and concerns and actually trains the staff, the students, the officers, the first responders, fire and EMS. So it's a collective responsibility where you have a lot of subject matter experts coming in and working on a plan to make it as safe as you can be.
So that's great to hear. So what's the routine briefly about the training of the staff? Because they're the ones that are critical to these things.
So the lockdown, I was actually a school resource officer at McDougal Middle School from 2001 into 2002. Uh-huh. And actually during that time, we actually started the lockdown training, right?
So this has been going on in this town for quite a while.
Correct, right. It was generally a response to the Columbine shooting, which was in April of 1999, and is basically a response from the school to get people out of danger areas and into safer areas. Giving them the time, giving law enforcement the time to respond and interact or deal with the threat.
Uh-huh.
So that's where that whole idea, mindset started. That was one of the lessons of Columbine, and there were a lot of lessons, but one of the lessons was that in the lockdown, and we need to just kind of have an ability to lock a facility down to limit the aggregate risk to students in that facility and student staff and anybody else who may be there.
Yeah. Well, of course, everybody, government people particularly, are all saying, well, we should do this and we should do that. We should arm the teachers. Now, that doesn't sound too exciting to me.
No, I don't agree with that. Because we train a lot, and sometimes I don't think the teachers would get the benefit of training as much as we do.
Yeah.
And, again, sometimes I feel that we don't train enough in certain situations. So I don't think the teachers would do.
Well, I don't see how the teacher who is armed could do anything anyway, because first place their gun is in their desk. The shooter might be in another part of the building,
mm-hmm.
and it just doesn't make any sense at all.
Cause a lot more confusion than that's needed.
Right, and some children might get harmed that shouldn't have been harmed.
Yes.
Well, and the challenge too is my wife is a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And a teacher is a calling, in a sense, much as law enforcement and any other.
Yeah.
I would make a very bad firefighter, right, because I don't have that firefighter mentality. I'm a police officer because that's who I feel I'm called to be. And I think when you're dealing with teachers, too, they're incredibly special people. They have an incredibly honed set of skills in order to teach and interact with kids. And then to shoulder another responsibility on them that would significantly shift maybe the way they needed to view the world would be, I think, a little too much for most folks who got in for different reasons. And I don't think that's a fair responsibility.
I'm glad you made that comparison to the firefighters, because we've had fire department on this show here, too, and the mm-hmm. fire chief and some of the fire folks. And they have their own calling, too, just kind of like you do. And it's for those of us on the outside, we don't have a chance to talk with police officers very often, and it's usually under strained conditions, like picking up for just a speeding ticket, or somebody in the neighborhood mm-hmm. gets robbed or something like that. We don't talk to you like we're talking now and get the full flavor of the commitment that you folks have to your service. And that's so essential.
I think one of the things with law enforcement, with any other public service job, you really have to find your calling.
Yeah.
Right. And and that, you know, for the chief and I think, you know, with the number of years we've been here, we really feel like we're where we need to be mm-hmm. and enjoy it.
Now, we hear about people say, oh, you got to find the people that have mental problems. Take care of the mental. Do you have any indication through rumors or facts that of certain people in this town that could be a problem.
A problem as far as?
As far as any kind of a problem, whether it's molesting people, raping women, shooting aimlessly. Do you have any – how do you know if there is somebody, and how can you really justify that what you know is a fact?
Well, that's where it becomes into partnership with the community. We ask when people receive information that somebody or a group of individuals may want to do harm to somebody else, that they call and let us know. Then we'll do a threat assessment. We'll take the information, see if it is credible, and if it is, then we'll formulate a plan to deal with it.
How often do you get these calls?
It just depends. I mean, we get a various calls dealing with I've had calls with cats in a tree dealing to somebody armed with a firearm and shooting. Uh-huh. So it just depends.
And I think as things are maybe nationally in the news, like the Parkland shooting or the situation with the serial bomber in Austin, Texas, then we will see we will see those types of calls mirrored here. Like people, you know, a lot of times people hesitate. Maybe they're concerned about somebody. Well, because of the Parkland shooting, maybe they're saying, hey, I should go ahead and call and report this and just figure out if there actually is something. So we had, I think, one or two calls about possibilities, concerns for some schools. We investigate it thoroughly. We do a threat assessment. We look at it, investigate it, and, you know, there was no issue there. With the Austin, Texas situation, we responded to two suspicious package calls within about a one-week period when that wrapped up, because people are very much aware with what's going on nationally. And then, of course, where you are, if you see a package, maybe the day before you would not have given it a second thought. And both of the packages turned out to be completely legit. There was no issue with them or anything. But people
are
concerned.
Which is usually the case, I suppose.
Which is usually, and thankfully, usually the case. You know, again,
you don't want to have to take a bomb. No. What would you do if you found a package that you really thought was explosive? You wouldn't just turn it open yourself. How would you?
No, I don't know if you remember. A couple of months ago, we did have a possible suspicious bomb with the. It was a call tied in with the student on UNC.
Oh yeah.
His car was over here, and it was thought that he had explosives.
I remember that
in the vehicle. So we had to divert traffic, evacuate some businesses, and we reached out to our mutual aid partners with Durham County Sheriff's Office, who has a bomb squad.
Okay.
So they came down and searched the vehicle, made it, cleared it to make it safe, and found no explosives in it. Uh-huh. So that's what we do in those situations.
So that's you know you have specialists in the area
that
you call to help you in the situation locally.
Yeah.
And with the two package calls that we got the other week, we're fortunate UNC Police Department has two bomb sniffing dogs. So we reached out.
UNC
Chapel Hill. This is the UNC Campus Police Department. Okay. They have two bomb sniffing dogs. So we reached out to them, and they were gracious enough. Again, it's a partnership with law enforcement. We rely on each other's resources at times, and they were able to come out once we'd done an initial evaluation. And there's a point where you know or don't know, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, so we had the dogs come out, and, you know, fortunately, again, there was no issue with them. It was just somebody being aware of something that maybe was a little bit out of sorts.
So you really haven't found anything that could have killed or hurt somebody right recently in the area.
No, sir.
Which is great. Now, you talked about the UNC Police Department. I know Duke has a police department, too. What's the value of a private police department on a university campus versus using the police department of the community where the university is located?
Well, the university police, the university is just almost like a mini city. It covers so much area and ground, and those officers will be familiar with that as far as also the rules and regulations of that institution that they have. They enforce state laws just like we do.
Yeah.
So, but they'll be there to know the students as well and everything. It's just a small police department on that campus.
Well, are they as well trained as you guys are?
Yes, they go through the same training as we do. Basic law enforcement, they go to some of the continuing education training that we have and everything.
So you have confidence in their ability to do their job?
Yes.
I've often wondered that because, you know, I live in Durham now, and Duke has its own bus service, and I guess I don't know whether UNC does or not.
They have P2P. I don't. We have Chapel Hill Transit, which is
Chapel Hill Transit. Yeah, free for everybody, which is great. I mean, So I always kind of wonder if these organizations are doing the job that you guys do, as capable as you are.
Yes, they are. All our law enforcement partners are very capable in this area.
Yeah, we work with them a lot, again, because there are going to be incidents, especially when Chief was talking about the suspicious vehicle on West Weaver. They're going to rely on resources outside of what you have, so you need to rely on your partnerships.
And we've talked a lot about the partnership today. So I want to talk about partnerships with the citizenship. You brought that up, too, mm-hmm. earlier. What are the interactions with the citizens of Carrboro?
Besides just day-to-day interactions on calls for service, we try to put things on for the community to come to, like Coffee with a Cop.
Where do you do that?
Coffee with a Cop is we partner with local coffee shops, and they let us come in and just we buy the coffee for people. If you want to come in and get a free cup of coffee on us, and come
so
and talk.
Tell me when I can do that. I don't live here, but I'll be glad to have a.
I think the next one's coming up
with one of you guys.
April 20th. Not sure.
Yeah, it's coming up in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah,
we'll get that periodically.
Yeah, like I say, over here at the Gray Squirrel, we've had one there. You just come in, and we have several officers there sitting at tables, and just come in and have an open conversation about anything you want to talk to.
So our next one, Bill, is April 20th, which is a Friday. At 8:30 over at Weaver Street Market. So,
okay.
If you want to come, I'll even sit next to you.
Okay, thanks. 8:30. Well, okay, that's not too far to drive in the morning. And sun is out, you know. Mm-hmm. So these are issues. What about the residential neighborhoods? You said you do visit them, and you do some walking, talking.
We do patrol in residential neighborhoods and stuff. It's more. Carrboro's a little bit more spread out as it goes north and so forth, but we try to ride through as many areas as we can. And I encourage my officers just to get out. You see somebody cutting their yard on a Saturday morning, just get out and say hello.
Uh-huh.
Just try to get them to know the people.
That's a good idea, yeah. So do you feel confident that the citizens are going to report things to you or run away from them when they're suspicious or nervous about something?
I think a lot of people sometimes they view 911 as for just emergencies only, and that's not the case. You call 911 for anything.
Yeah.
And it's best to call 911 to report. If you feel somebody is walking in your neighborhood, you're not quite sure they're looking in cars, or just that car doesn't look right, or something doesn't look right, call 911. An officer will be dispatched and find out. It may be nothing, or it may be somebody that's getting ready to break into a house, or that's already broken into a house.
Uh-huh.
We can stop that or catch that crime.
And if I can say something on that too, a lot of times people, when they observe things, they hesitate to call us. And something to think about, you know, is people are not suspicious. Behavior is. So focus on the behavior of a person. And in your neighborhood, you'll have a good sense of what is normal behavior in your neighborhood and what is not.
So.
And that's why we want people to call us. Not that someone is a certain color. We get people who, you can walk wherever you want in this town, right, within general rules. We want people to call us because people are behaving suspiciously, right? And I think sometimes people are concerned because of a certain person's a certain color, or it can be something where they hesitate, I don't want to call. But focus on the behavior of the individual.
Okay.
If it is outside the norm, give us a call, and we'll be happy to.
Somebody crawling in your neighbor's window and you know mm-hmm. your neighbors are not home, go ahead and call.
Yeah.
We've had situations like that where people call 30 minutes to an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been a crime committed. If we would have gotten the proper notification, we'd have gotten there and possibly caught them.
You're listening to a conversation with Chief Horton and Captain Atak of the Carrboro Police Department, and it's great to have these gentlemen here because the police are so important to our lives, and the more we know about them and the more they know about us, I think the better off we all are. If I were to walk into a neighborhood here, let's talk about the commercial neighborhood. If I were to walk down Main Street or Weaver Street, and I stopped into a shop, and I would ask them, let's say I stop into the meat market down there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the local police? Are they okay?
I think the majority of the people in town like us. Of course, we're always going to have some critics with as everything. The town did a community survey, and I think the rating, I think we got like an A minus, based on the citizen survey of the, what we do. We also did a department survey, and we got strong approval overall with the results that we got back.
You mentioned 911. Where is 911 for this town? Where the where do they operate?
The 911 center is located in Hillsboro, and so that they handle communications for all the agencies in Orange County.
All Orange County.
Yeah, except for UNC Police Department. They have their own dispatchers.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, they have.
So if you're a student at UNC and you dial 911, are you going to get their own people?
In theory, it depends on where your cell phone hits.
Yeah.
So sometimes, yes, they should, in general, geographically on campus, be routed to UNC. But if you're, you know.
Oh, I see, yeah.
As UNC is kind of, when you're away from main campus, can be part of a contiguous town and not contiguous to the main campus. So you may get whatever municipal law enforcement, Chapel Hill, Carver, or the county.
But they will transfer you to the appropriate
dispatcher. If you tell them where you are.
And one thing I wanted to also say about calling 911 and reporting crimes, we've been having some issues of late, but do not use social media or email to report.
Now that's a good point.
Crimes in progress or something. Just call 911. And the reason I say that, we don't have a desk officer that's there 24 hours. So if you call our telephone, the main line, you may not get an answer. So
I emailed you guys to get you on the show, and I guess it was late Friday or something, and I got a note back to nobody here or something. We don't answer. Mm-hmm. We don't answer emails.
Exactly. Right.
And then that email response, we stress, if this is something in progress, please call 911.
Yes.
Because I think, again, some people just hesitate for whatever reason. They don't want to bother us. You know, the bottom line is we have officers here 24/7, 365 days a year. Call us. We'd much rather come out, check something out, find out that it's completely fine, then you hesitate, and we find out later it actually was something. We could have maybe had a different result had we been called earlier. And plus, it's a chance to meet us. We're nice. We're friendly. We give out stickers, you know, stuff like that.
A cup of coffee, right?
Yeah,
a cup of coffee. Yeah, once a month, and we had a cup of coffee with us.
Well, I remember I think I've only called 911 since I've lived in North Carolina, and somebody ran into my car, and I guess it was in the county, and I think State
Highway Patrol
came to, and it was fast service. I mean, you know, it was a minor accident, but they were there in 10 minutes, which is pretty good, I think.
For Highway Patrol, that's real good.
Yeah. So, but we have you, and we have Highway Patrol, and we have the sheriffs.
Yeah.
How do you all operate? I always wondered if the sheriffs are necessary.
Yes,
because you have a good staff of well-trained people, and you cover the town. Why don't you cover the county a certain section of the county?
Well, we do cover a certain section, Carrboro. So we cover,
I know, but outside of Carrboro, you don't.
No, the unincorporated part, that's what the sheriff's department covers.
Yeah, but why do we need them? Because you could just expand yourself a little bit farther, and Chapel Hill could do the same thing. And the sheriffs are... seems to me kind of a historic organization that goes back to Old England.
Yeah,
where you came from, Captain.
I think what you're talking about is kind of like a metro police department, like kind of Charlotte Mecklenburg has. And I think where you're from, Miami.
Yeah, where I grew up, we did not have a sheriff's department. We had a metro police department.
So one department covered the county?
Well, it covered the unincorporated parts of the county, because the county I grew up in, Dade County, I want to say had 33 municipalities now. I don't know if it had that many when I lived there, but let's say it had 25. So you'd have 25 municipalities, and then you'd have the unincorporated, because it was a 3,000-square-mile county.
Uh-huh.
So you had the unincorporated areas were patrolled by the metro or metropolitan police, and now they're called Miami-Dade Police. But
they all covered the unincorporated and the towns.
No, the towns had their own. So you had the city of Miami, you had Coral Gables, Hialeah.
So they have their own police then.
Correct.
So it's just like you have here.
Right, it's just like you have here. Yeah, generally the sheriff has been responsible for patrolling, providing patrol services and law enforcement services in the unincorporated areas.
The jails.
Yeah, in charge of the jails, and also serving civil process. Civil process is like, if you decide to sue me as a person, then that's a civil process. Think about it. Come after my $3. But yeah, they have their own function, but and also the Highway Patrol will generally investigate motor vehicle accidents in the unincorporated parts of the county that do not occur on private property.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, too, because I lived in the unincorporated part of Orange County when I lived out there. I had a Hillsborough address, but I didn't live in the town. Mm-hmm. But the sheriff would be my first call.
Yes, you would. A sheriff's deputy would be dispatched to handle what you needed.
So where does the highway patrol start and stop in the organization, in the responsibility?
The highway patrol, they have jurisdiction on the roadways and the highways.
Just on the roads.
On the roadways and highways. Yes, they can respond to calls for service in town. Say if we had a major, say if we, knock on wood, we had a school shooting, hope that doesn't occur. But if we have a school shooting, an active shooter at a school, highway patrol in the area, they're going to come respond and assist us with that. They have same law enforcement powers as we do, just like the deputies. We all have the same law enforcement power. We just have different jurisdictions.
Okay, but why are you putting them in the school shootings when you're already here?
So
because it's on the highway, the roads are...
No, it's mutual aid. An event like that's going to take a lot of resources. Again, we have 39 officers.
I see, okay.
On a day shift, we have 6 officers working patrol. If that squad is full today, nobody's offering training.
Yeah.
And then we may have another 4 to 5 in the office. So just look at the hotel.
In other words, you need more people.
They're very resource intensive. Yeah. Yes.
So what you're telling me now, right now, while you guys are here, there are 6 patrolmen in the area, in driving around Carbon.
Up to 6, yes.
Man, how many women do you have in your...
What are we, 14% women? I can't remember the numbers, but we have 7, I want to say 6 or 7?
6 or 7, yeah.
And they have the same responsibilities as the male.
A sworn officer is a sworn officer.
There's no differentiation.
Okay, well, I'm glad to know that you're hiring women, and I imagine you're paying them the same as men.
Oh, mm-hmm.
That's the big issue these days, is the pay certain of women. Okay, we've got that. Oh, what are the percentages of the various types of issues that you get called on? Let's say house breaking in, or traffic accidents, or wife swapping, or swatting. Or
I didn't know that was a crime, Bill.
Yeah. I don't know the numbers, Captain APAC. Captain ATAC might know.
You can't even say my name.
Can't even say your name. we're very lucky. We don't have a lot of violent crimes here. Majority of it is property crimes.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, we recently did have a shooting at one of our gas stations a couple of weeks ago.
A gas station?
Yeah.
Shot somebody?
No, a shooting occurred on the property at one of our gas stations.
And did somebody get hurt?
Yes, they were shot several times.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So, but the majority of the crimes we deal with are... property crimes, larcenies, shoplifting, breaking and entering into homes and cars. We do have the occasional domestic violence, loud noise call. Any given day, you can get anything. It's just, that's one good thing about this job. It's just, you never know what's going to come at you.
So property crimes, they're household break-ins, and also in the commercial areas, I imagine.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Because you've got a lot of good commercial areas that are very mm-hmm. popular for what they sell and what they produce,
mm-hmm.
and I suppose those property crimes are mostly after dark.
Well, the house break-ins actually generally occur during the time that you and I would be at work.
Okay,
for those that work a more traditional schedule, so uh-huh. You know, those would probably start somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 a.m. and run till about 2 o'clock, and that's when I think folks may possibly be home from school. And so that was our peak hours, about 10 to 2. And you know, house break-ins, residential break-ins will kind of ebb and flow. You know, they'll kind of run in a cycle. But yeah, those are mostly daytime crimes. Of course, any bank crime is during the day too, because they're not open. And we're fortunate we don't have a lot of that.
You
so
don't have any, do you have banks in town?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Matt, we do. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
One right here.
We got 5 that I can think of just off the top of my head.
Okay. I want our people to know that you're listening to WCOM. This is your voice in the community. WCOM is located right here in downtown Carrboro, attached to the front of the world-famous Art Center. You can come and see us. We would love to have you come and put a check in an envelope and stick it under the door, because we are supported by people in the community. If we don't get funding from the people in this community and elsewhere, the lights will be off, and you won't have these great conversations with the police department. So you can go to our website, WCOMFM.org, and make a safe and secure donation. Everything you give to us is a write-off on your tax forms, and if you hurry up, you'll get them in by the 15th or the 16th of April. But we really are depending on people's interest in the station and generosity in supporting the station, and I want to thank everybody for that. I'll tell you toward the end of the show about some individuals or organizations that actually underwrite this station, I mean this show, with people like the chief and the captain that we're able to talk to today. How do you get to be a good officer? How's the training work?
I have no idea. No,
they just give you a badge, right?
Yeah, no.
I like your badge; it's shiny.
Thank you. Well, that's the administrative badge. So in terms of like what are you talking about, like the state level training initially?
Yeah, how do you get started and
so actually
get qualified to do this work?
Your timing is very very good, Bill, because today in Hillsborough at the Durham Tech campus, a basic law enforcement training academy started.
Oh, really? Basic law enforcement training
academy? BLET. It's not
whom?
A sandwich. It's a training academy. And that is the training required by the state.
Who's doing the academy?
It's run with Durham Tech and the Orange County Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
So they are, I think they want, I want to say, I'll be teaching in it next week. They have 17 full-time students. So that is the state-level requirement to be certified as a sworn law enforcement officer. So you have to go through that training. And it's probably about 5.5 months now full-time.
Uh-huh.
The hours continue to increase. It's up to 700 and something, I think, 740 hours maybe. And it's full-time Monday through Friday and sometimes classes on Saturday. So they go through various blocks of instruction. That's the law, procedures, techniques, radio skills you need. So the block I'll be teaching is the arrest, search, and seizure and constitutional law block. So in that block, we kind of delve into what the Bill of Rights, what responsibilities do you have, what protections do people have, how do you operate within those parameters safely and professionally as a law enforcement officer.
There's a lot of legal stuff to understand, isn't there?
So I liken it to if you played basketball without knowing the rules. If you don't understand the rules of basketball, one, you can't be a referee. You have to know the rules, right?
Yeah.
You have to know how it's supposed to happen and or how it's supposed to go. And so I think for people who are getting into law enforcement, you need to know the restrictions on your abilities, the breadth of your abilities and your powers under state law, federal law. And that's kind of what that block, the arrest, search, and seizure block, I call it my block. It's not my block.
So you're teaching this course?
Yes.
Helping with that?
Yes, it's a 28-hour block.
Okay.
And the 28 hours goes into that 740-hour total at the end.
And it starts when?
It started today.
And so how many hours of training is that, 700?
I want to say it's 740. Don't quote me. It's 700 and something. But
740 hours, and then you are qualified to be?
So once you go through the training, right, and you have to pass a test on each block, and you have to pass series test, and then you have to pass a final state exam. So assuming you pass all those, right, and you maintain the ability to remain in BLET to the point where you can pass. You pass the physical requirements. You pass the state exam. At that point, then, you are eligible for the state to be sworn.
So if I want to be a policeman in Carver, do I pass the same tests if I want to be a policeman in Silva?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, some agencies will run their own academies and tweak them a little bit, but the general parameters are the same.
Okay. So that's When I'm being stopped by a policeman or when I'm involved with an incident, what's going to be said to me by the officer?
What are you doing, Bill? You have to give me more information.
Yeah, it depends on the incident. Give us a certain scenario. It just depends on the situation.
Well, I'm usually getting stopped for speeding.
You have a heavy foot?
Yeah.
I mean, the officer's going to stop you. They should introduce themselves to you and explain to you why they've stopped you. And then ask for your driver's license and registration. Then they'll go back to their car and run your information, make sure everything is valid. And then if they decide to issue you a ticket or a warning, they'll come back and do that.
Is there any how does the officer feel comfortable that the person that he or she is stopping is going to respond peacefully as opposed to maybe possibly be armed or angry?
You never know. you never know. Traffic stops are one of the most dangerous things we can do. We can be stopping you just to let you know, hey, your registration's out. And you never know, that person might have committed a crime or a murder or something in there.
Yeah.
And you just never know. That's just the
High risk part of the job.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you never know. So but you have your routine down. You go to the guy's window and talk to him, mm-hmm. and ask for whatever documents you want, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you have in this jurisdiction? Is there certain streets or highways that are like Highway 54 mm-hmm. goes through your jurisdiction?
Yes, it goes through us and Chocolate Hill out in the county.
So that's a pretty active highway. Is that a problem for you?
No, we do quite a bit of speed enforcement out there because that is the main thoroughfare. That's one of the highest speed roads we got going through town. So it's a 45 mile per hour speed limit, and I've heard officers stop people going fast as 70, 80 miles an hour.
Really?
Yes.
Boy. Yeah, well, of course, it joins in with 15501, and I guess there's a lot of combination of traffic switching from mm-hmm. highway to highway out that way. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you tell me about the training, which is very interesting. Overall, how do you work with other police departments or with various other jurisdictions that are supporting a peaceful life? Do you have certain communications? Do you meet together? Do you have information coming to you from the state? How do you make sure that things that are happening elsewhere, you're aware of it and you all understand how to deal with certain things in the same way?
We do share information, whether it be officers meeting with officers from another jurisdiction. We might have patrol officers meet on the border lines and talk to a Chop Hill officer about a call that they just had, just passing on information. We may receive an email or a phone call from the other agencies advising of something that's happened or could be happening in our jurisdiction. And there are various other organizations where we do get intelligence information on and just letting us know what's going on statewide in case we comes around here.
So do you have national organizations that you participate in, and you go to conferences to keep up with some of the issues that you don't normally see?
Yeah. I belong to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the North Carolina Association of Chiefs of Police, NOBLE, which is a national organization of black law enforcement executives, and the North Carolina Police Executives. So can't go to all those conferences, but I try to pick and choose which one I go based on what the content of the conference is.
Well, okay, so you're a black law enforcement officer yourself, so you have an organization with these with your other black officers.
Yes, but it is open.
What's the real value of that compared to your other organizations, chief of police organizations?
It is open to other, so Captain Atack, I'm encouraging him to join too.
Oh, okay, yeah, I will do that.
I also think, especially with the trying times that all law enforcement is going on to, as a black male, I can see things a little bit different than, say, from one of my white counterparts.
Okay.
So we have topics dealing with such as that. The last conference I went to with Noble, just conferences dealing from anywhere from body camera to President Obama's 21st century policing task force and what they recommend that all law enforcement do. It's a myriad of topics. It's just not for black officers, but everybody is welcome.
Uh-huh.
But we can relate to certain topics dealing with minorities.
In Durham and cities where there are more communities of black citizens,
mm-hmm.
Will the officers that cover those areas be normally black officers, or doesn't it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. We don't assign officers to areas by race or community. That's the area that you're assigned to work today.
Okay. Now, do you have other officers in this town that are non-white?
Yes.
Okay.
We're pretty diverse for our size. We have some Latino males and
some people that speak
black
Spanish.
Males. Yes,
that's good. Yeah. So So you can pretty well cover all incidents that might be created by a variety of people.
I think for as small as we are, we have a lot of good folks. But yeah, like there are some gaps in our ability. We don't have any Burmese or Karen speakers on staff. We have a significant
population.
Immigrant population from Burma.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
All right, and so that can be a problem with discussion. You know, but we're fortunate we have the language line, and actually we have used other resources in the community in situations.
Now, the Burmese population, do they live in a similar community themselves altogether?
Sometimes they'll be concentrated in certain apartment complexes because that's where they can afford. But yeah, I would. They're everywhere in town.
And what are they? What prompted them to settle in Carborough?
So Burma. If you know the history of Burma,
it's not even Burma anymore.
So right, right.
Else.
Now Myanmar.
Right.
No, it's not even Myanmar anymore.
Yes, it is.
Is it Myanmar? Okay. So you know there are folks that were. It was basically a military junta. And did not treat people very well. There were significant ethnic, you know, like we see a lot of times with ethnic problems in other countries. There was a significant amount of violence and other issues that caused these folks to be recognized as immigrants and brought to the United States.
So you have this Burmese population here. Do you have other immigrants coming into Carborough from other countries, Syria or some of the other countries that are having struggles?
Our community, I think all of Orange County is very diverse. You can find people from all walks of life, all ethnicities and countries around the world.
Yeah.
So you may go to a call and speak to somebody just from Russia or Germany or Africa. You just never know.
Well, you have three jurisdiction towns in this county, Orange, mm-hmm. Carborough, Chapel Hill, and Hillsboro,
mm-hmm.
And they all seem somewhat different. This town, Carborough, seems to me to be strictly a residential town with some commercial areas.
Right.
Chapel Hill, of course, is controlled by the university. I say it's controlled by the university, and you may not agree with that, but they're the dominant influence in that city. Is that a city, Chapel Hill?
Town, city, depending on.
You know, ironically, legally, there's no difference because mm-hmm. it's still the town of Cary, even though they have something of 145,000 people.
I
think most people would argue that's definitely a city, but names are, in that sense, there's no difference.
And Hillsboro is kind of a historic town, mm-hmm. Strictly residential, with only, well, I guess there's a few things around.
They do have some residential, some commercial.
Yeah,
commercial business.
Well, they've got a couple of industrial parks. Yeah. They've got actually for their size, they have a fair bit of
business.
Commercial.
Now this town
tax
has
base.
The downtown commercial area, and a mall outside on 54. Is that what do you call that?
Carborough Plaza.
Is that it? Those are the two commercial areas.
Yeah, you have Carborough Plaza, then Willow Creek, and then you have the downtown district.
Yeah,
here in Carborough.
Where's Willow Creek?
It's down on Jones Ferry Road.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And, you know, you live in one place in this general triangle. You don't go everywhere to see what's going on every place. So you travel from your house to your job or your house to, like, from my house over here and wherever else I might go in Durham to shop. But when I lived in Hillsboro, I think I traveled a little more because it was – more rural, and you had to go into other places.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we don't have too much more time. It's 10 of 6. We usually stop this conversation about 5 of 6 when L.A. Bachelor Show comes on, if he comes on. Sometimes he's live. Sometimes he's on the on a recorded show. But anyway, he's the show that follows this show, L.A. Bachelor, the Bachelor Pad, as he calls it. This has been great having you gentlemen here. As long as I'm doing this show, I'm going to keep after inviting you back if you don't mind.
Okay.
We don't mind.
And you're both so young, you won't be retiring for another 20, 30
years. Well, I'm young. I don't know about Chief.
Hey.
I'd like to thank retired Ambassador Michael Cotter, who's been on this show maybe 12 times. Mike is a retired ambassador, a citizen of the Foreign Service. He's been in the Foreign Service his entire life until he retired a few years ago. And when he comes on our show, he's full of information about what's going on in the world, particularly in the Middle East area. Anyway, he's an underwriter of this show. I would also like to thank the the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters. These are professionals from all over the area who will help you work your way through the jungle of finding good health insurance for yourself and or your family or your business. And they support this show. I'd also like to thank Tim Hux. Tim is a certified financial planner, and he has a little business called Rising Tide, which he hopes will give you an indication that if you invest with him, your tide will go up as opposed to something else. And we have a new underwriter, MidCap Advisors. They're from New York City, and they're a financial services company that specializes in mergers and acquisitions. And that's the support that this particular show receives. I'd like to thank other underwriters who support, like Rocco's show Saturday morning, the music hall from 9 to 12. Rocco has probably more underwriters than most of us because he's such a popular host for his three-hour music show. Now, let's summarize this, you guys. You're both going to stay here for the rest of your natural lives, and you run a you're getting the A minus, which is not bad. I never got that much when I was in college.
I think if we were perfect, we'd have no way to improve. But as an A minus, we have a few avenues to explore. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you keep yourselves in? Do you require certain physical training to keep everybody healthy and strong enough to do the job?
Well, we do. This year, I'm hoping to get passed in the budget an incentive for fitness. If we're going to introduce the POPAT, Police Officers Physical Agility Test. Yes.
Okay.
Officers have to perform that to graduate from billet in order to get their state certification.
Okay, so that to begin, they have to pass it.
Yes. So what I'm trying to do is implement a program where if you do pass your POPAT, you get a $500 incentive. That's also going to help us remain competitive with other agencies around here that are offering that. And then eventually, after some time, it's going to be mandatory that you pass that to keep your job within the department.
Okay, so you're going to send them to a gym or?
The town of Carrboro offers everybody a free membership. You just got to pay taxes on it.
The town of Carrboro?
Yes.
All town employees?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Where's membership where?
At O2 Fitness.
Okay, that's pretty great.
That's a good benefit that we receive from the town.
In fact, the town of Carrboro does support the station. We get a few dollars, like Rocco. How much do we get from the town of Carrboro?
I think we get $1,000.
$1,000, okay.
Every year.
Okay, we'll be happy for that. And, you know, I keep saying when I had the town manager on this station, on this show, I said, why don't you guys buy this radio station and just run it yourselves? I mean, you know, we're always interviewing you folks, and I've interviewed a lot of people from the town, and Rocco's had a lot of people on his show from the town. This is kind of a town radio station, and I think the town should own it.
We say.
So can I tell the town manager that both the chief of police and his captain thinks the town should own this?
We are not going to sit here and advocate for a position.
Well, you advocated a lot, and thank you guys for coming. It's been great having you, seeing you, both of you, and stay healthy, and we may see you again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good to be here.